Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across America. Glad to have you with me today. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We need to talk about the rule of law. Out of the gate, we got to talk about the rule of law. This is important. I'm old enough to remember when the left lectured Donald Trump on the rule of law. You will recall when Donald Trump tried to move money in the federal budget in the Defense Department in order to build a wall at the border. Democrats and the media screamed about the rule of law. The rule of law, they said. Time and time again, they screamed about it. They said the rule of law was important. Donald Trump was becoming an authoritarian. Donald Trump was a tyrant. Donald Trump's supporters, by supporting him, they were supporting a tyrant. They were supporting someone who ignored his constitutional oath of office. And it was, regardless of the circumstances, he couldn't do it. He had sworn an oath. He swore to take an oath. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God. George Washington added the so help me God. Every president since has said it. Those other words, they are written in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution of the United States. And how dare Donald Trump do what he was doing because he was not preserving, protecting, or defending the Constitution of the United States. He was excoriated on CNN. He was excoriated on MSNBC. He was excoriated in editorial pages across the board. Conservative to liberal would occasionally excoriate him. The liberals all the time. He didn't support the rule of law. He was violating his oath of office. How dare he? On June 29th, five members of the United States Supreme Court, a majority of the United States Supreme Court, declared that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention does not have constitutional congressional authority to impose a moratorium on renting. And they ruled 5-4 that since it was going to expire anyway in 30 days from that date, they would let it expire. But if the CDC wanted to do it again, they needed congressional approval. And the Democrats did nothing. They did not seek congressional approval. They did not seek to have Congress intervene. They did not seek to have the president intervene. They sought nothing until Friday. The day before the moratorium was set to expire, progressives in Congress who had sat on their hands for a month demanded Joe Biden do something, the CDC do something, the Congress do something, and they began camping out in front of Congress in sleeping bags on the steps of the Congress, of the Capitol building. Late yesterday, Joe Biden, President of the United States, decided that he would, by executive order, impose a new moratorium on evictions. How is it constitutional? How is it constitutional? It's not. That's the answer. It's not. It is not constitutional. It is not something that the President of the United States has the ability to do. It violates his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And the kicker is Joe Biden himself said so. Joe Biden said that the bulk of constitutional scholars acknowledge that what he's doing is unconstitutional. It's not illegal. It's unconstitutional because the CDC needs congressional authorization to ensure that private property owners cannot manage their private property. You are the king of your castle, except when the CDC says so. Congress hasn't given him the power. That's what the Supreme Court said. They can't do it. It's like NASA deciding to tax the satellite dish on top of your house because it beams into space, connects to a satellite in space. NASA does not have the authority to do that. Congress would have to give NASA the authority. Congress has chosen not to give NASA the authority. Therefore, NASA cannot do that. The CDC has many powers under its emergency health declaration. The CDC does not have the power to interfere with the private contract rights of a property owner and someone who chooses to lease out their property. That's what the Supreme Court said. And yet Joe Biden decided that he was going to violate his oath of office. So much for the rule of law, huh? I thought the rule of law was the whole thing. Maybe it was never about the rule of law. It was about Trump having the power and they didn't want it. Yes. It was always about Donald Trump having the power that they wanted. It was never really about the rule of law. In fact, progressives have a history of tending to ignore the rule of law much more than conservatives. And this kind of explains why the right has gone down the path it has. When the left screams about the right's authoritarianism, Joe Biden just announced that screw the Constitution and what the Supreme Court said. I'm going to do this anyway, and you can try to stop me. There's your authoritarianism. There's your, but Donald Trump, he laughed at a potential coup. There was no coup. There was no coup. You can say Donald Trump violated his oath of office. Donald Trump was impeached for his words, for inspiring people to go to Congress to block the Electoral College vote. Joe Biden just gave a speech where he said that what he's doing isn't constitutional and he's doing it anyway. Joe Biden swore to uphold, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Those are the exact words of his oath of office. And Joe Biden himself yesterday said what he's doing isn't constitutional. The rule of law can't just matter when the other side does it. Let me give you a compare and contrast on this. Stephen Collison is a British guy who writes opinion pieces at CNN.com. He is a progressive. He pretends he's not, but he is. Listen to this. This is from February 15th, 2019. Trump will appear in the White House Rose Garden at 10 a.m. Eastern Time to sign the compromise funding bill and announce a slate of executive actions, a White House official said. The plan is expected to include a national declaration of emergency, which he would use to reallocate money for a total of $8 billion in government money to fund the wall. A declaration of a national emergency to bypass Congress and reprogram funds already allocated by lawmakers would represent Trump's most striking assault yet on the system of constitutional order that he has sworn to preserve, protect, and defend. If the move is not permanently blocked by the courts, it could also come back to haunt Republicans, since it could provide a precedent for a future Democratic president to enact liberal priorities on an executive whim. Trump's move, a political maneuver that he believes will help him keep his central campaign promise and insulate him from standing with his base, is likely to soon present political dicey challenges to his fellow Republicans. Pelosi is likely to invoke a clause in the 1976 National Emergencies Act that prohibits Congress to terminate a president's declaration, that McConnell appears to have no power to stop from coming to the floor of the Senate. And on he went. Trump's critics are warning that America's constitutional architecture is now in peril from a president who has never shown much interest in submitting to institutional checks on his power. Even if the courts and Democrats in the Senate succeed in curtailing his behavior, the president can rail against their effort. Trump cares most about his base and rarely dwells on who or what is caught in the crosshairs. This showdown has demonstrated yet again that his own political interests come before any respect for constitutional norms. That's Stephen Collison in CNN writing about Donald Trump. Here he is today writing about Joe Biden. Even President Joe Biden doesn't know whether his new federal eviction moratorium for rents is legal and sustainable, but crushing humanitarian and political pressure left him no choice but to take a chance on an emergency move. The new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention scheme was announced after the White House, hampered by a Supreme Court ruling and Congress's failure to act, had repeatedly argued it had no constitutional authority to extend the moratorium. Biden himself on Tuesday said that the new moratorium may not be constitutional and is essentially an attempt to buy time to get backlogged funding out of state coffers and into the pockets of renters and landlords alike. The conundrum threatened to force millions of Americans who lost incomes during the pandemic out of their homes in an appalling twist to what has already been an agonizing year. The problem was that the moratorium expired on July 31st at a moment when much of the more than $40 billion in funding already provided by Congress to pay landlords for back rent for tenants is still yet to be handed out by states and local authorities. To head off mass evictions, the White House came up with a classic Washington fudge, not unfamiliar in an era of Capitol Hill gridlock, in which presidents, especially Democrats, have improvised with executive power to shield constituencies from consequences of a malfunctioning political system. It's the political system that's malfunctioning now. It was Trump then. Why should we ever take these people seriously? We shouldn't. I mean, that's the short answer. The rule of law can't just matter when it's your opponents in power, and yet that's essentially what the Democrats are acknowledging. That's what Stephen Collison at CNN is doing here. Essentially saying, the system's broken, so we're going to do something. But when the Republicans said the same thing, they said, you can't do that. You took an oath. You took an oath. How dare you? It's hypocritical. It's ridiculous. It's dumb. And by the way, there are going to be far-reaching consequences for this. There actually are real problems here. You know what's going to happen ultimately? So Blackstone and BlackRock are two private equity companies, and they've been buying up a ton of rental houses around the country. They actually supported extending the moratorium. And do you know why? So that landlords would be forced to sell for cheap to them so they could acquire more properties in their portfolio from landlords who can't pay their bills because the renters are not paying them. This is actually an attack on the middle class that the Biden administration doesn't seem to care about because he's got to keep the progressives at bay. The Biden administration just gave a drubbing to progressives in Ohio yesterday. Nina Turner lost. She was the one. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the squad, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, they all backed. The Biden team rallied to beat her with a more moderate but still progressive member, a future member of Congress. He had to do something to placate them, so he did this. Even though Biden himself admits it's unconstitutional, he did it anyway. What does that say about the man's character? And what does it say about the media who spent 4 years attacking Trump for doing the same thing, now humping Joe Biden's leg for doing it? Hi there. It is Eric Erickson here. I want to highlight for you a couple of stories over the problems with this moratorium. And listen, I this needs to be said because it's lost in the conversation. It is possible in a world without nuance anymore, where everything is binary, it actually is possible to feel real sympathy for people who are going to be thrown out of the houses they've lived in because they can't afford to pay rent during the time of global pandemic, while also recognizing there is no power for the CDC to do this unless Congress gives it the power, and Congress hasn't given it the power. We have a system where the legislature, you know, Article 1, we talk about three co-equal branches of government. Actually, the reason Congress is Article 1 is because Congress is the preeminent. Congress is the most powerful. Congress is the most significant house branch of government. It is the states and the people together legislating. And the executive cannot exercise power unless granted directly by the Constitution or the legislature. And the CDC is part of the executive. It has not been granted permission. We have a system that is the way it is supposed to work. When Republicans deviate from that system, Democrats cry foul and the media goes nuts. When the Democrats violate the system, the media applauds them. That's not sustainable long term. You want to understand why Republicans are drifting towards authoritarianism, according to the left? That's exactly why. The Democrats started it. You can't win a political fight when the Democrats entrench themselves by violating the rule of law and constitutional norms and then daring you to challenge them. So one reason it was good for Trump to have packed the courts with judges who have thus far been as harsh on conservative and Republican elected officials as they have Democrats. Here are two stories. Here's one. This is the Washington Post from May 1st. The landlord had highlighted the first of the month of his office calendar and marked it as payday. But now the first had come and gone. The one-week grace period was ending, and for the 13th consecutive month, Romeo Budu had collected less than half of his total rent. Time to try begging for it, he said, and he grabbed his booklet of receipts and walked out to his car. He drove through the low-income neighborhoods of Schenectady, stopping at a half-dozen small houses that accounted for most of his income and all of his family's savings. He cajoled $75 in cash from a laid-off hairdresser who owed him more than $7,000. Thanks for at least trying to work with me, he wrote on the rental receipt. He collected $200 from a renter who was just $1,600 behind. I'll come back tomorrow, Budu said. And then he continued up the street to his oldest property, a three-story home that had helped lift him into the middle class and was now sending him to bankruptcy. Budu parked in front and flipped through his receipts. The tenant owed more than $12,000. And on the porch, Budu saw a pile of warnings and eviction notices dating back almost a year. No more grace periods, read one from last fall. Pay now or leave. In the COVID economy of 2021, the federal government has created an ongoing grace period for renters until July, banning all evictions in an effort to hold back a historic housing crisis that is already underway. More than 8 million rental properties across the country are behind on payments by an average of $5,600, according to census data. Nearly half of those rental properties are owned not by banks or big corporations, but instead by what the government classifies as small landlords. People who manage their own rentals and depend on them for basic income and are now trapped between tenants who can't pay and their own mounting bills for insurance, mortgage, and property taxes. According to government estimates, a third of small landlords are at risk of bankruptcy or foreclosure as the pandemic continues into its second year. And then in New York, the New York Times highlights this. A landlord in Queens says her tenants curse and spit at her and owe more than $23,000 in rent, but the eviction moratorium keeps them from being kicked out. Who are the real victims here? And notice there's not a moratorium on mortgage foreclosures. It's just on rentals. Banks tend to be responsible for 90 some odd percent of mortgage foreclosures, and small businessmen tend to be in charge of about half of rents in this country. This is a war on the middle class that Joe Biden's waging, and it's contrary to the Constitution as well. That's the actual problem here, and those are the facts. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. The phone number, if you want to call into the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We need to talk about the 11th Congressional District in Ohio. Speaking of Ohio, hi to those of you on WHIO in Dayton, Ohio, well away from the 11th Congressional District of Ohio. Dayton, Ohio is to the southwest of the Cleveland-Akron area, and that is the 11th Congressional District. It runs from the Great Lakes, Cleveland, down through Brecksville, down to Akron, Ohio, and has fingers across Akron, Ohio. It is a D plus 30 district. That means on average in a typical election, a Democrat will get 30 percentage points more than a Republican. It is this district 53.5% black, 37.5% white, 3.6% Hispanic. It was a district represented by Marcia Fudge, who was the mayor of Warrensville Heights, a Cleveland suburb, and she was appointed to the Biden administration as the HUD secretary at the request of Jim Clyburn. Jim Clyburn is the number three Democrat, Democrat from South Carolina. He caused Joe Biden to win South Carolina and thereby saved the Biden nomination on the Democratic side. He is a of the left, but more moderate than your AOCs and the squad. And Nina Turner decided to run when Marcia Fudge went into the White House. Nina Turner is a woman who, as an activist and elected official in Ohio, rallied to Bernie Sanders and the far left. Nina Turner is a radical on the left. She is who inspired Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to run for office. AOC has said this on the campaign trail, that she heard Nina Turner talking at a Bernie Sanders rally and it inspired her to run for office. Nina Turner is of the far left, and she lost in Ohio, and we should all be thankful. Now, how did she lose? She ran ahead almost the whole time. Towards the end of the campaign, Jim Clyburn came out again and backed her opponent, Chantel Brown. And then the Congressional Black Caucus came in for Chantel Brown. And then SDK Knickerbocker came in. Now, you don't know who SDK Knickerbocker is. I know Hillary Rosen. We were on CNN together for a while. She used to be the head of the RIAA, the recording, whatever industry or trade association for the recording industry. And she's a progressive, but she is a progressive who understands that if the Democrats give into their far left impulses, they will lose everywhere. And she works at SDK Knickerbocker with Anita Dunn, who you will recall just left the White House. She saved the Biden campaign, got him back on message in the early days, went into the White House with him as a trusted advisor, and has now gone back to SDK Knickerbocker. It's not a coincidence that SDK Knickerbocker came in on behalf of Chantel Brown. And what was their message? On the ground message of, she has Joe Biden's back, Nina Turner does not. And Chantel Brown won 50.2% to Nina Turner's 44.5%. Nina Turner today said that she didn't lose evil money. Evil, that's her words, evil money poured in from out of state. Evil money, she says. That money is from moderate to progressive Democrats who aren't crazy. But there's an interesting factoid in the data that you have to pay attention to here. Urban African Americans were divided in support between Nina Turner and Chantel Brown. In the suburbs, black, white, and Asian and Hispanic voters went for Chantel Brown. In urban areas where black voters were divided, urban white voters went for Nina Turner, the communist. And by the way, she is at best a socialist. But she is a communist. She makes Bernie Sanders look like a capitalist in her positions. Urban whites are the furthest left in this country. And what's so striking about this is that Chantel Brown did really good with white people in the suburbs in this district. Now, this is all a problem for the Democrats on a variety of fronts, and the Democrats are starting to pay attention. They have some serious issues ahead of them. Morning Consult has a story out today. 49% of independents disapprove of Joe Biden's job performance, contributing to his worst approval numbers this year. Perception of Joe Biden's handling of the pandemic and recovery of the economy have soured among independents since June amid a surge of COVID-19 cases and inflation. 51% of independents disapprove of Biden's handling of the economy. Still, Biden's overall standing with unaffiliated voters is better than Donald Trump's at this time in his 4 years, but it doesn't really matter when you're losing the independents. And the economy has a great deal to do with it. There is some bad news on the economy. Private companies added only 330,000 jobs in July, far short of the 653,000 that people were expecting to have happen. At this moment in the day, I'm looking, it looks like right now, if you're listening live, 12:42 p.m. on Wednesday, August 4th, the Dow is down 310.79 points after stewing over the economic numbers. It's not good. And costs are going up. Ken Langone is the co-founder of Home Depot. He was on CNBC this morning. Listen to what he had to say.
What I'm saying right now is, please, please, Congress, be careful. You're playing with fire. If you're wrong, the little guy, the guy you say you want to help, is going to get punished severely. And that's going to be too bad.
In an hour where we're talking about taxes, it is an unofficial tax on the middle class, which, by the way, over the last several decades has been completely eroded. And we're talking about income inequality. And yet the crux of this is fiscal and monetary policy that is actually only exacerbating that situation.
Inflation is a regressive tax. Inflation, yeah, I'm going to pay more like the little guy does, but as a percentage of what I spend, it's insignificant. The poor guy that's working from paycheck, the woman, the guy she's worried about helping, who's living from paycheck to paycheck, his kids like to drink milk, his kids like scrambled eggs in the morning, his kids like to go to a movie occasionally. When you start raising all these prices, it's the little guy that gets crushed. Who's thinking about him? Oh, I know they are. They're thinking about his vote.
Right.
That's what they're thinking about, his vote. I'm asking the question to all these senators and all these congressmen, be careful what you're doing. The irony of it is, I think a lot of this is motivated by the concern they have for the 22 cycle.
Yeah.
They may only exacerbate their problem by doing this.
All right.
They may only exacerbate the problem. They probably are. Listen, Langone is someone who knows what he's talking about, and he knows inflation. As one of the founders of Home Depot, he gets it. Here's a problem. Politico had this report yesterday. During a closed-door lunch last week with some of his most vulnerable incumbents, House Democrats' chief campaign chief delivered a blunt warning. If the midterms are held now, they'd lose the majority. Sean Patrick Maloney of New York followed the bleak forecast, which was confirmed by multiple people familiar with the conversation, with new polling that shows Democrats falling behind Republicans by a half dozen points on a generic ballot in battleground districts. Maloney advised the party to course correct ahead of 2022 by doing more to promote President Biden's agenda, which remains popular with swing voters. Keep that in the back of your mind here. We're not afraid of the data. We're not trying to hide this. Tim Persicco, executive director of the Maloney Chair Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, said in an interview, if Democrats use it, we're going to hold the House. That's what the data tells us. Maloney's foreboding words come as Democratic leaders map out an aggressive strategy to hold the House next November, defending a tenuous majority with the help of a president who has more ambitious plans to juice the economy. But Maloney's omen of defeat was hardly a surprise to battleground district Democrats he was addressing, some of whom have been sounding the alarm for weeks as the party's messaging, particularly on the economy, needs a reboot. And it's not just those so-called frontliners who've been alert to their colleagues. Representative Debbie Dingell, Democrat of Michigan, who co-leads caucus messaging, gave a wake-up call to another group of fellow Democrats last week, telling colleagues the party needs to better explain what Democrats have been doing to help the COVID-ravaged economy. A Democratic messaging blitz this month on Biden's priorities is set to get help from a White House communications war room that will activate while members are back in their districts. Around the country, Biden's cabinet is being dispatched to talk up jobs and infrastructure in swing districts in Ohio, New York, and New Jersey. They want to talk up Biden's handling of the economy. They want to tie themselves to Biden. This was their strategy in Ohio 11. Chantel Brown tied herself to Joe Biden. The message was simple. If you want to help Joe Biden, you need to vote for Chantel Brown. If you want Joe Biden's picture of America to succeed, you need to vote for Chantel Brown. Nina Turner was running a hard left campaign against the establishment, against Joe Biden, against the Republicans, against everyone, that there was a new way, a wave of progressives, defund the police and the like, and she lost. Well, now there's a problem. Again, they want to focus on Joe Biden and the economy, and suddenly independents disapprove of the way Joe Biden is handling the economy. And inflation is on the rise. And if you pay attention, they continue to tell you it's transitory. Inflation, y'all, is transitory. Means it's not going to stick around long. You notice what this has in common with the border? Border crossings are seasonal border crossings that continue to go up month after month after month after month after month. The illegals crossing the border go up, but it's seasonal, y'all, just like inflation is transitory. They want you to believe that. But it's not. And that's a problem. It's not going to help them. It continues to undermine Joe Biden and the Democrats. We are August 4th of 2021. The midterm elections are more than a year away. Just consider this. Just consider the Democrats are more than a year from the election, freaked out about the outcome of the election. Let's just put it all in perspective for you. They're having to battle progressives within the Democratic ranks. And what do you think is going to happen? Nina Turner, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders and the like, they're out today saying they're not going to let this happen in the future. They're going to go out and recruit more progressives to challenge Democrats inside primaries like conservatives did with Jim DeMint against the establishment. And they're going to fight. They're going to make their stand. They're going to be better funded. They're going to better prepare. They're not going to wait for an undercover, underground, under the radar establishment effort to come in and defeat them. They're going to stand their ground and fight. And the only people they have with them are white progressives in urban areas. Even the white progressives in the suburbs are tired of the progressives. And they're tired of inflation. They're tired of gas prices going up. They're tired of egg prices going up. They're tired of milk prices going up. They're tired of beef prices going up. They're tired of being lectured on being converted to veganism. They're tired of being lectured on how to defund the police. They're tired of being told they're racist by virtue of being white. Only the urban white people seem to like being told that they're deviants. Well, I mean, of course. The rest of them are kind of tired of it. The Democrats have some real problems here. But here's the thing. The American media is so in the tank for the Democrats, they can't tell the Democrats this stuff. The bottom line problem for Democrats is this. The media has been working very hard to tie Republicans to the January 6th stuff and make it all about Donald Trump, who's not on the ballot. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, they're actual sitting members of Congress. For every Marjorie Taylor Greene the media seeks to define and vilify as a nutty right-winger, she is, there are five of her on the left. And the media normalizes and mainstreams those people. And the result of this is that the media normalizes people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as the public continues to reject the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And it becomes very, very hard to vilify and attack Republicans and tie them to the crazies in their party when the media itself is vilifying when the media itself is mainstreaming an AOC and a Bernie Sanders and a Nina Turner and an Ilhan Omar and saying this is the future of the Democratic Party. No one believes that the crazies are the future of the Republican Party as much as the media says it. But the media itself makes the case that the AOCs are the future of the Democratic Party because most of the media that comments on this stuff, they're to the left of the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And so it becomes easy for them to identify with the AOCs and try to push her over on the American people who aren't having it. They rejected that level of progressivism in a D plus 30 district in Ohio What are they going to do as they trot these people out as the face of the party for the rest of America? It's not going to go well for the Democrats. And they're starting to get a clue, but they don't know what to do about it because the media is invested in making the AOCs of the world the face of the Democratic Party. Just scrolling through Instagram and just saw this post on Instagram. Your body is not Amazon Prime. It's not going to show up in 2 days. Fair. Mine might never show up unless I give up the beer and pizza diet. My goodness. I gotta play this clip for you from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I should have played it during the eviction moratorium, but it's relevant. You got to listen to this woman.
Should, and once we get a moratorium extension in place, we need governors and municipalities to get emergency rental assistance funds out. That is what the point of this moratorium is. It's to buy time. This is a huge victory for working families. This is a huge victory for the vulnerable. And it is a huge victory for the power of direct action and not taking no for an answer.
Right. You know, she has one meritorious point there. The federal government allocated billions of dollars for rental assistance and never actually sent the money out. So the federal government has caused part of this problem, but telling private property owners they can't control their private property is not the way to go about it. And there's no statutory authority, but hey, who cares about the rule of law when your team's in charge? Ridiculous. Folks, let me tell you what's not ridiculous. This deal from Omaha Steaks, it is fantastic. It's $99.99. And you're thinking, what? $99.99 for a bunch of it's like 59% off. And here's the thing. If you were to go to the store, you couldn't buy everything that's in this package for anywhere near this price point. It's an incredible value. It really is. Stock up your freezer. Your kids are going back to school. You want some good, easy eats at night. You want some grilling out. So the weather cools down. This is the way to do it. You go to omahasteaks.com and you put Eric in the search bar. E-R-I-C-K. You'll see my name. And you'll get the Summer Grill Pack. $99.99. Great deal. 59% off. You get 4 bacon-wrapped filet mignons. But that's not all. You get 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 boneless pork chops, 8 gourmet jumbo franks, 4 caramel apple tartlets, a jar of their signature seasoning. Goes great on the steak and the chicken, by the way. And you get for free, totally for free, 8 filet mignon burgers. That's right. They turn the filets into burgers, and they are delectable. Just fantastic. Go to omahasteaks.com. You put Eric in the search bar. You get this summer grill package. I'm telling y'all, it'll make the end of your summer be just a delight for your stomach and your grill.